Hi, my name is Irmogan, and today on Founders Grit, we have Dan Thompson. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you? It's a pleasure to join you.
Hi, thank you for joining us. So can you tell our viewers a little about yourself, where you are right now, where do you work, and how did you come about to where you are?
Sure. I appreciate, again, the invitation. So again, my name is Dan Thompson. I oversee our technology practice here at Vaco. Here in Tampa, Florida, our responsibility is twofold. One is to help customers and clients find executive personnel, so CIOs, CTOs, VPs, and directors. And then we also do consulting work. So we do work in the Power BI, Microsoft, Azure. Mm-hmm. Let's see, what else do we focus a lot on? Cloud implementations, .NET development, doing a lot of that kind of stuff. So we really focus on trying to help our partners and our clients implement solutions.
Interesting. Okay. So tell us with the whole COVID-19 situation for the past 1 year. It's because now we're in March. It's been 1 year since everybody's been working from home. How has that been working out for you guys?
Yeah, it's been interesting. Florida and Tampa has not been a state and a city that did a lot of remote work. We were always behind a lot of our competing cities, Nashville, Raleigh, and Phoenix, Dallas, and cities that did a lot of remote work. So Tampa has always been a city that has been what they consider just very family focused and culture focused. And a lot of companies here never really pushed the envelope when it came to working remotely. Whereas a lot of folks wanted it, it just wasn't really an option. So I would venture to say a year and a half ago, probably less than 2% of our workforce worked remote. And then we're just coming up on our date, which was March 12th of last year, when everything decided to start shutting down here in Tampa. And from there, it was obviously 100% switched, outside of essential personnel to move remote. So a lot of our clients came immediately wondering what to do. A lot of them hadn't implemented virtual solutions or remote solutions for their employees. They didn't have, a lot of them didn't have formalized instant messaging capability either through Slack or Teams. They didn't have global licenses with Zoom and things of that nature, because all of their meetings were in person, right? And if they didn't, they could send a quick text message or quick email. Well, obviously you can't do that when you're trying to coordinate with 1,000 employees. So we really helped our clients and really kind of pivoted away from kind of our core business into helping them implement Teams and implement Zoom and implement, other solutions that they chose. We helped them set up virtual environments. We helped them outfit their help desk and desktop support teams, remote teams. And that's what we spent probably the first 3 months of COVID really helping our clients, prepare for.
Interesting. So this was a lot of the things you're talking about. You were saying that Tampa wasn't a place where remote work was already present. So
right.
getting into remote work and furthermore helping clients get into it, it must have been a lot of new territory. How did you guys go about it?
Yeah, it certainly was new territory. And I'll be honest, we just kind of had to figure it out along the way. We have some partners here that are Microsoft partners. So we were able to connect them with Microsoft licensing for Teams, et cetera. But a lot of it was trying to figure out, and it's the consultative approach of what we do when we're building a new, web application or new business intelligence platform, is really sit down and figure out what are your basic needs to keep the business running, right? Obviously, everybody wants bells and whistles and things of that nature, but you don't need all of that right away. We can always add that. We can change things. We can modify it. What can we do today, right? Because everybody went to work on that Friday thinking that everything was going to be fine. And later that day on Friday, all of a sudden, people weren't coming to work on Monday, right? It was originally going to only be for 2 weeks, if you remember that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then it was, okay, well, how can we piece this together for a week, right? Or a week and a half? And then it's, oh, this is going to be a lot longer than 2 weeks. And so from there, it was, what's the Band-Aid? And then after putting the Band-Aid on, let's do the reconstructive surgery underneath. But let's figure out a solution. And for a lot of them, it was figuring out virtual environments, getting them space in the cloud, getting them space, for getting them licensing. It was a lot of that. What's the core functionality that we need to run? How can we make sure that our systems are tied in, and then modify what the trajectory of what we want to do in IT is, right? You know, you have a big app dev project. Can this continue? Do you need the money? How are you going to be able to do this? So a lot of it was sitting down, identifying priorities, and then trying to come up with solutions and working with them. But I think that you saw it growing up here in Florida. We have, whenever we get a hurricane or a natural disaster that comes here, it seems like the community kind of comes together to fix the issues. And that's what we saw, a year ago was people being very, very helpful, offering help, offering advice. And I think that that's what helped a lot of these companies, make that quick switch. Some companies were more prepared than others, but I think for the most part, we did a pretty good job.
Okay, perfect. So in all of that, I had two questions and I quickly wrote them down. So first being, so when you guys were trying to figure out what licenses to get all these companies, which virtual environments to figure out, did you see any shocking price increases or difficult negotiations? Because obviously the demand for these virtual environments increased. So were you guys having an issue or were being delayed access
to these environments? We never dealt with any price increases or price gouging. I think, we were fortunate to not see that, at least anything that was noticeable, on our end. And certainly there's a due diligence process that we're going to do, and we're not just going to buy the first solution, or we're not going to say this is the solution you have to go with. I think a lot of it has to deal with really sitting down and knowing the difference between what licenses offer what and what's necessary. So I think a lot of times when we deal with crisis or we deal with an issue that's a little bit out of our control, it's immediately, well, let's just find the quickest solution. And sometimes the right solution isn't always that far behind the quickest solution, right? So I think it's important, to sit down, identify what your need is, and then get that right license or get the right equipment, or make sure that you're finding the right person. Working in hiring and staff augmentation, things of that nature, a lot of times we deal with, okay, this person's immediately available, let's just start them tomorrow. It's like, well, what if we waited 3 more days and try to make sure that we found the right person? It's the same way when it comes to making, investment in software. It's, hey, is this the best option, is this the quickest option, or is this the option that's gonna check the most boxes? And so a lot of that was, we created checklists, we created some white papers.
Due diligence,
we created, and so many people didn't know what to do. They're like, well, just get a Teams or a Zoom or a Skype or whatever it might be. It's like, well, let's take a second. What do you need? What's the most important thing that you need? Could you go 2 days without it while we find something? It's like, well, yeah, we could probably go 2 days. Okay, perfect. And then you're saving money, implementation's easier. You know what you want. But sitting down, making sure stakeholders, know what they want rather than just immediately snapping a finger and buying.
Yeah, makes sense. So during this, when you realize that it's probably just 2 weeks or a month long process, but then let me phrase this a bit better. When did you realize that the COVID situation wasn't just going to be a band-aid, it's going to be more of a long-term remote work situation? When did you realize it? And then how did you go from, okay, this was a short-term fix, how do we make sure this goes on for a few months or 1 year now?
I don't know if there was a tipping point other than it just kept always being 2 weeks. And as long as it's always 2 weeks away, it's going to be forever, right? So I think at that point in time, probably, you know, a month in, 6 weeks in, as cases continued to rise, it seemed like there was, you know, multiple variants, the, you know, the contagiousness of it, you know, continued to be, you know, effervescent, and it just didn't seem to slow down. But I'll be honest with you, I think it got to a point where it was no longer necessary for people to rush back, right? I think, you know, when we initially thought we were going to be gone for 2 weeks, it's like, okay, well, before we make a couple, you know, some large capital investments, let's take a quick pause here and just, let's see if we can band-aid ourselves through it. And then it was, okay, we need to figure out some longer term solutions. And then I think once they found that, you know, employees, you know, were motivated by working from home, that they could be just as productive working from home, that they put a lot of the stopgap measures in place to make sure that things didn't get missed, that all of a sudden it didn't come about how quickly can we get somebody back into the office or, you know, our employees back. It became a, how can we make sure that life doesn't get too much more disrupted or work doesn't get disrupted? So from there it was, hey, let's continue on with business as normal. We don't know what's going to happen to the economy. We don't know what's going to happen to really anything. So let's just continue on. And I think part of that was, hey, if we're in the middle of an ERP implementation, let's continue to do that. If we're building a new business intelligence platform, a new application, let's keep on with business as usual. And I think that we saw a lot of companies, you know, certainly were dealt some tough blows. There's other companies that were able to do pretty well, you know, during the pandemic and were able to keep business as usual because the mindset shifted from, okay, how do we get people back in the office to people can't be in the office. How do we continue business as normal? And I think once we made that switch is when productivity started to rise again.
I get it. Okay, makes sense. So so a lot of the uptake of technology, like all remote working, the switch from working at an office to working remotely was felt easier for a lot of the younger generation. My question is, because you guys deal mainly with C-suite executives, did you see a difference in the adoption of such remote technologies? How was the response from the people you source or augment?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think people certainly dealt with it in different ways. I think one of the things that helped with the transition, I mean, certainly, you know, I'm 33, right? So I grew up with AOL Instant Messenger. I got text messaging when I was 15, 16 years old. I've been around technology for the better part of my entire life, right? Certainly it's not as ubiquitous as it is now, but I've grown up. So for me, it was, you know, relatively easy transition, but I'll say this, and I think the most important thing that we did was to try to encourage better habits of working remotely, right? I think what happens is when people were working remotely without much guidance, it was, I'm already at my computer, so I'm just going to work, right? And I'm just going to sit here and stare at a computer screen for 9 hours. And then because I can't go out to eat or I can't go to the bar or I can't go to a sporting event, I'm just going to keep working. And people just put themselves in this hamster wheel of consistently working, and they weren't taking breaks. They weren't walking outside. They weren't exercising. They weren't eating properly. They weren't engaging in, you know, good dialogue and good discussion with peers and people around them because they're so laser focused with being alone and you know, being isolated. Yeah. You know, so one of the things that we really did is we tried to do a lot of, you know, team activities, you know, over Zoom or over Teams, you know, to just keep dialogue going, you know, but we encouraged, you know, 30-minute exercise breaks, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, right? We
really?
Encouraged
nice.
Stepping away from your computer, right? Because you're going to get so burnt out if that's all you're looking at and that's all you're doing, because you have to think of a normal work day when you're in the office is, you get there, you might get to your computer, you log in, you open your email, then you might walk over to the coffee machine and have a couple minute conversation. You're going to go back and do some work. You're going to turn around, talk to somebody, even if it's for a minute or two, or you're just going to have random generic conversation. You're going to get up, you're going to go to the bathroom, you're going to grab some water, you're going to grab some coffee, you're going to grab a snack, you're going to take the elevator up and down. So like, theoretically, you're not at your computer for 8 or 9 hours a day. So why put yourself through that torture when you can't do anything else either. So step away, do another activity, do something that's going to clear your mind, even if it's for just a couple of minutes, but step away. And I think for, you know, generations that, you know, might have, you know, struggled with the work from home, I think that that allowed a separation that was different than, you know, just, hey, business as usual, because that's not the way business is done either, right? Business isn't done in a vacuum of a 9-hour focus window.
True, true. And I guess the problem with working from home, or at least like working on your laptop for like 8 to 9 hours straight, is when you leave your laptop and you go around into your room or into your kitchen, you feel like you're taking a break from, like, you feel like you're going away from the office, or you're taking time off from the office, which should not be the case, because in an office, you're not in front of your computer at the whole time. You know, you are, you're talking to other people. You are still in the office, you're in a professional environment, but you may not be 100% productive 100% of the time. So it gives us a false sense of taking a very long break. So that's why I feel like a lot of people just would like to be on their computer for like straight 8 hours to feel validated that, okay, I'm not taking an undue break. You know, I'm not doing something wrong or taking away time from work.
Absolutely. And I don't know the statistics offhand, but, you know, overall hours that people worked last year increased.
Yeah.
Right. Of those that were in the working world, because they were sitting at home and they didn't know the separation, right? Because they were going, maybe if they were on a laptop, maybe they're going from a computer screen in the office to bringing their computer out to sitting in front of the TV. Right. And it's like, well, since I'm here, might as well answer an email, might as well update my spreadsheet. Right. And so there was never that separation where, you know, a lot of people certainly, you know, come home from work and bring their laptops and things of that nature. But a lot of times people feel like they got their work done in that day, and they don't necessarily always feel that need to just, well, I'm bored, or since I'm here, or since it's open. Right. And so I think we really, really try with all of our employees, and then, you know, certainly the consultants that we had, you know, really tried to make sure that they knew that there was a separation between, you know, work from home and life at home.
Okay. Yeah, like it makes absolute sense that we should have these things. I think a big factor which helped me personally was just not working from my bedroom, you know, just
sure.
Take your laptop away, go into the living room, go into the lounge or the kitchen, just like sit, like separate your personal life, like the area where it's you versus where the area you'd want to work. So you have a mental space where you can feel like you should work here and you should not be working at other times. These are all the questions I had for you. Do you want to give out a shout out or any advice to people who are working from home right now?
I think that you just made a very important point that needs to be reiterated is, you know, don't feel like just because you're working from home that you always need to work, but also create that place that is your workspace. Make it a designated place and make it a place that you can leave. Not your couch, you know, certainly, you know, not everybody's able, but try to find a designated area that's for work and a designated area that's not for work. Especially if you do have your laptop at home and everything else, is to make sure that you know that just because you're using your home as an office, it doesn't mean that your home is your office. Right. And I think that's so important, because I think that we just get so focused. Well, if I'm not going to leave, I might as well just keep working. And since I don't have a commute anymore, you know, normally I would leave at 7:30, but I'm already up, so I guess I'll just start working at 7:30. And it's like, well, normally I would leave, but I don't have a commute home, so I guess instead of leaving at 5, you know, I'll work. I'll finish this email. And it's like all of a sudden you've just dumped in an extra 10 hours worth of work a week. And hey, that's great for your employer, but also for your mental sanity.
Exactly.
You need to know, hey, there's a cutoff time. And that cutoff time is usually your commute. So give yourself that time and do something, right? Get out of the house if you can, or go do an activity that distracts you, that says, hey, at 5 o'clock, I'm going to do this.
Exactly. Exactly. Just like have a schedule, do something other than work, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like I said, it's so easy to get caught up in it. But outside of that, just know that there's, I guess, the most important thing just about work in general is there's always work, right? There's always going to be work. There's always going to be an email. There's always going to be a client. There's always going to be a sale. There's always going to be something that needs to happen at work. That doesn't mean that you have to do it right then. Doesn't mean you have to do it right now. Give yourself a break. We were built to live to work, not work. Or pardon me, for to work to live, not live
to work. To work. To live. I remember my Mima used to say this. Try to leave work at 5 because tomorrow when you go to work, work is still going to be on the desk. But you might not be, you know? So like enjoy your life as well. You gotta work hard and play hard. So yeah, absolutely. Thank you for coming, Dan. Thank you so much. Take care. And that was for today. Thanks for watching, everyone.